So here we sit in Toronto 2 days after the snowstorm of a lifetime, there are people saying, which is a pile of hooey, because we've had this much snow before, and we've had winters where we've had three times as much snow by the end of winter. And maybe we'll get there, but we're not there yet. But there was some digging out to do. Not that I did any. John, of course, was very excited because he got to bring his snowblower out for the first time in 5 years.
That is the best. Nothing better than having the snowblower going. Well,
you could have thrown it in the back seat of the car and come over here and done it for me. But no, that's okay.
Yeah, what that would have been great. I could just envision you sitting in a lawn chair at the top of the stairs, smoking a cigarette, telling me, "Oh, you missed a spot."
That's exactly what would have happened.
I know.
Exactly.
I didn't necessarily want to be told by two people in a day, "Oops, you missed a spot," because you know darn well I was getting that at home anyway.
Well, Shannon, since you own a snowblower, I mean, yes. I think it is the responsibility of anybody who does have a snowblower to do at least a couple of other driveways of neighbors that don't have a snowblower. So how many driveways did you wind up clearing out over the last couple of days?
Two.
Oh, you actually did one other?
Yeah, there's a couple of people in our neighborhood that don't have the capability at times. And of course, after the snowplow goes through, you need the snowblower to get through that wall of snow that the snowplow creates. So I help out. And we have a really good little group of people in the neighborhood that make sure that some of the seniors that live in the cul-de-sac get looked after. So it's a nice little community of people.
So now I am, as you know, still relatively new to this neighborhood, and this is the first snowfall that I have experienced.
Yes.
In my former neighborhood, which was North York, they have a fantastic policy there. They clear, and once they do the street, they have a little thing that comes by and cleans out the end of the driveway. So you don't have to do that yourself.
We don't have that
here in
Mississauga. No.
In Mississauga, no?
No. We're
well, then the house is for sale.
the reality is that we have an issue with sidewalks right now. There's so much snow that the sidewalks haven't been cleared properly. So we're going to launch a protest and get those darn sidewalks cleared.
Do you have sidewalks on your street?
We don't, but they're, you know, well, neither do what I. You, but the thing is that the major streets close to us have sidewalks. And when you're walking your dog, as I am wont to do every day, I don't want to walk them on the streets. I want to walk them on the sidewalks. Right now, the sidewalks are about 4.5 feet deep.
Well, why doesn't this city take care of that? Apparently, we
should phone. We should phone her worship. We should phone Ms. Crombie and ask her what the heck's going on. Well, see, it's not Hazel anymore, Bob.
Well, no, I get that, but I mean, I guess it wasn't done when Hazel was in charge.
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. There was a lot of good stuff done when Hazel was around. Let me tell you.
Well, I'll give you that. Well, we should perhaps I will leave it to the producer to contact her worship, the mayor of Mississauga, so that we can rail on her.
Well, you know, now that you become a suburbanite, but let's face it, it's not too many times. You already have a restaurant named after you and your picture on the wall, so that's okay in our neighborhood. So,
well, yes, there are a few restaurants that have pictures of me on the wall. Actually.
Really? More than Bobby's Hideaway?
Yeah, well, there's the Sky Dome. The Sportsnet Grill or whatever it's called.
Is that still there?
I don't know. I haven't
and
been
are
there
you still and are you still why would you
I
be
don't
the
know
Sportsnet
if I
grill?
Was on the wall. I don't know if I've been removed from the wall.
That's because your buddy Moore put you on the wall.
Oh no, I don't think so. It was a decision. The manager made a decision. The manager of the restaurant was a big fan of the program.
Yeah.
And so there was a prominent picture of me displayed there. And there were items on the menu named after me.
And you got paid for that, of course.
No, not a nickel.
What?
Not
you
a
didn't
nickel.
Get commission for the Reuben sandwich?
Wasn't the Reuben. I don't even remember what it was.
I love Reuben sandwiches.
Apparently, there's a great deli just down the road from me here. So if you ever want to go for a deli sandwich.
Okay.
I haven't been there yet, but
Good to know.
One more thing before we, we're not talking about anything here today, so far, at least, just irrelevant junk. Here is something that this drives me crazy. Now, you know, I don't spend much time on social media.
I'm well aware.
I don't look at it very often. And
it's all
I
the people you follow.
I certainly don't participate in the process. I don't post things on any kind of a regular basis. I find most social media, like Facebook and Instagram, to be like ridiculous. There are people that post pictures of themselves every damn day.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but I just don't get that. But it hit an all-time high or low, as the case may be, the last couple of days. Mm. I had my football coach, one of the things he used to say, we were talking about this the other day, like celebrations in the end zone.
Yes.
And he didn't like celebrations in the end zone. And so he said, and you've heard this phrase before, I'm quite sure. He would say, if you get there, act like you've been there before.
Sure.
Right? Which essentially meant, like, don't go ridiculous. Don't go crazy. Same thing applies to snow. Yeah, the number of posts of people taking their iPhone and scanning a photograph of their backyard filled with snow, thousands of them. And the relevance of that is what? Do you think you are the only person that got snow? Like the neighbors on either side of you didn't get any. It all came to you. You think you are alone in this exercise? Do you think a photograph of snow in North York is different from a photograph of snow in Etobicoke or Mimico or Scarborough or any other burg or O in and around Toronto? Which is another thing. Why do all these places end with O?
Because they can.
People, we've all seen snow. We've all seen plenty of snow. We do not need to see more snow on social media. And as sure as hell, recognize you are not the only person who has snow. I have it piled up in my backyard. John has it piled up in his backyard. Yes, we have a 5-foot mound at the side of the driveway after we cleaned it or had it cleaned.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say after we cleaned it. What a lark.
Well, I paid for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so stop. Enough already.
So you're, let me ask you this. You're the news director of a television station.
No, I'm not showing snow pictures.
In charge of CNN or Fox News. You'd be great at Fox News.
I would never work at Fox News.
And there's a blizzard on its way. It's not your lead story. Don't you find it? That's one of the amazing things.
Wait a sec. Would it be my lead story when it's on the way, which is what you said?
Yes.
Sure. I would want to alert people that there's a crap load of snow coming. Yeah. Once you get the snow, it's not news anymore.
So you still would be, if it was a hurricane, you'd still be the guy holding on to the pineapple tree or the palm tree?
No, wait, a hurricane causes damage and...
Great, so does a snowstorm.
Well, no, it creates snow. I mean, what damage was done in this snowstorm?
Well, not this time.
Well, exactly.
We've had ice storms.
It's not newsworthy.
Hey, we had a mayor call out the army.
I remember that.
1999.
Well, that's snow.
Yeah.
Which reminds me when I was living in Las Vegas. Oh. And you know, you get a little bit of snow once every 10 years there or something.
Yeah.
So I wake up one morning and there is like barely a dusting of snow. Like, I mean, John, it is an eighth of an inch, maybe.
A skiff.
There's no snow on the roads.
Right.
It melted. But like on the grass, you know, there's like, I turn on the news.
Lead
city is shut down.
Yeah. That's what happens.
Schools are
weather
closed.
Weather stories.
Don't go to work unless you have to. There wasn't enough snow to shovel. There was no snow to shovel. And by 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, it had melted. It was gone. And that's the problem with snow, is that people overreact. Now in Vegas, okay, they don't see snow. You know, I had the neighbor's kids were out trying to make a snowman.
Yeah. Did you help them?
No. Well, they got a ball of snow about the big size of a snowball, and they used up all the snow on the grass. I mean, there was almost none. So yeah, I kind of get that.
Okay.
But because they don't, you know, this is a big event for them. Now, mind you, you know this from being in Vegas, I'm quite sure. There are mountains surrounding the whole city.
Sure there are. And you can see snow in the distance. That's
all winter.
Certain times of the year. Yeah, certain times of the year.
All winter. You can see snow.
Yeah.
We used to go to Mount Charleston. Mount Charleston was a 30-minute drive.
Yeah.
And there's a ski hill there.
Sure.
We would get up in the morning, have breakfast by the pool, go to the ski slope, ski all day, come back at 4 o'clock, jump in the pool, and then have a barbecue. All in the same day.
Life is good.
You know, in March or April, you'd be 70, 75 degrees in the city, and it'd be, you know, 25 or 30 up on the mountain.
The Los Angeles Kings, for the longest time on their television broadcasts, their biggest sponsor was Big Bear.
Oh, yeah, ski resort.
Ski resort, yeah. And people would drive from, you know, what would be I-10? I guess it would be I-10, Interstate 10, all the way up to Big Bear and ski and then come back for the hockey game. I mean, that's a natural thing there.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had the same thing in Vegas. So it's not like people in Vegas have not seen snow before. Not to mention the fact that almost everybody that lives there is from somewhere else. And usually right. It's back east.
Yeah.
But snow is a curious thing, isn't it? We'll take the break. I was going to say we'll continue with the program, but I'm not sure we've even started yet. We've snowed them again. Is all we have.
We've snowed them.
Well, we'll find out on social media if they take time to comment on this rather than show more pictures of their bleeping backyard covered in snow. Enough already. Back after these messages. I don't believe I introduced the show even. I just started talking.
Hello to our friends on Sirius XM.
Well, or on the podcast, which wherever you are, I was going to say enjoying this program, but I'm not sure. Well, we may have nobody left. There may not be anybody listening anymore.
Well, no, Weathermen. Weathermen will have listened to it. They will have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be shocked to find out there was snow 2 days ago. It's McCowan, it's Shannon on the program. Are you watching any of the Australian Open?
Not yet. It's no. the time, you know, it's mornings. I'm not a big TV guy in the mornings, right? You know, so no.
Well, but TSN is replaying.
I watch the highlights.
TSN's replaying all the Canadians matches. I know that. They're not doing it live. Well, they may do it live, but then they're not. Then they're replaying it later. Anyway, so where are we at here? So OJ got through the first round in five sets, had a tough match. Shapovalov is now through two rounds. His second round match, which happened yesterday, today, tomorrow, whatever it is in Australia, he went to five sets. Fernandez lost.
She's out.
And so we just got the two guys. Is that right?
We're only successful on the men's side in Melbourne.
We haven't talked much about Djokovic, and he's not worth talking about. But is him being out have any impact on how much you watch? Well, so far you watched none. But do you care about Djokovic?
No, I don't. But he's not an appealing person, Bob.
You know, I agree with you.
That's one of the big issues, you know, with such great success. You know, he's won this thing nine times. I would say that there's not an endearing quality to him. That becomes an issue for me.
Let me ask you this question. You turn on your television set, tennis is on, and you decide to watch tennis. Do you have to pick a side? Do you have to pick a player to root for?
Tennis? Yeah, I do pick sides. I do pick someone to say, oh, I'd like to see him win. Lots of it, I'm not sure what the reason is, whether it's gut or feel, but I do have to, you know, it's easy when you're, when a Canadian's on the court, but that makes the decision easier. But I do have to pick someone I like. And usually the great thing about it now with, you know, what I describe as two screen viewing is you watch the tennis or you watch any sport and you're sitting there with your iPad or your laptop on your lap. And, you're probably Googling what's the story? What's up with this guy? When did he last win? That's the thing I enjoy more now. My problem is sometimes I get so enthralled with some of the stories. I often stop watching and start reading too much.
Never do that.
You don't, huh?
Never.
There's no curiosity factor when something happens.
Well, I might be curious, but I don't have a laptop.
You could use your phone.
I'm not interested in using my phone to find out anything about somebody I'm watching. That's not my nature. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, no, I
know everything about everybody. So, you know, there's nothing to look up.
But I think that's, you know, that's where, you know, we had Scott Moore on last week to talk about where our business is going. But I think two screen viewing is now a fact of life.
It's like, how many screens do you have that you watch?
You're
talking about the phone, your phone or iPad.
I'm talking about your iPad and the TV. I think that is a given now. I mean, if I sit down in front of my screens, Bob, my TV screens, I have to have my laptop with me or my iPad. I have to.
So name someone that you know that does what you do.
I think most people do, Bob.
Well, no, you just said that over and over again, but you haven't cited a single case. Do you have any
Elliot Friedman.
Well, but you're talking about people that are in the business or were in the business. You're not talking about normal viewers. Normal viewers watch one thing at a time on one screen. Now, I have a big-ass television set.
Okay, we know it. We know that. You've told us that for 20 years.
So you've been in my new shack.
Yeah.
Is there another screen in sight? No.
No.
But I have a not quite so big ass television in my office upstairs.
Yeah.
Which I never watch.
Is it ever on?
Not much.
No.
Like if I was sitting at the desk. And at some point we will move this show up there to that office. And then maybe there'll be a giant picture of you on the screen behind me.
Wouldn't that be grand?
Don't hold your breath.
Okay.
But no, I don't watch on two screens, and I don't know anybody else who does. Something interesting that comes up during the course of watching the event or of watching another television show, I might pick up my phone and Google it.
Multitask, yes.
But the number of times that will happen in a week is less than once.
Really? Oh, no, not me. I am all.
Well, we understand. But do not try and purport that you are normal. You are abnormal.
No.
Who's watched or listened to this program for any length of time would already have deduced.
I think I'm closer to normal than you are.
Well, you think that, but name somebody else who does what you do, and you can't.
Bob.
What about your neighbor whose driveway you shoveled?
I don't watch TV with them. I watch TV by myself. As you know, I watch with all my friends.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's my point, too.
But I think people do sit there and watch sporting events with their computer. And I think it's going to become more and more of a factor as we see sports betting, Bob. I think that's going to happen more and more as people end up doing prop bets during games. And the constant drone of people with computers and watching sporting events is going to grow and grow. And I think that's a fact of life.
Well, you think wrong.
I don't.
So
I don't.
But you do root for a player. Like if you're watching a golf tournament, do you try and pick?
I have favorite golfers. Yes,
yeah. Well,
I
you, favorite. And if they're on the leaderboard, you're rooting for them.
Yes.
Like for me, if Federer is in a tournament, I'm rooting for Federer. Now, not necessarily over the Canadians, but it's rare that the Canadians get to the
easy point to root for Federer. Easy to root for Federer.
Number two is probably Nadal. I think he's a decent enough guy, and I love his game, and he's certainly a great player. I will always cheer against Djokovic. I don't care who Djokovic is playing. Djokovic is playing Claude Thamalfichuk, who I've never heard of, from some country that is the size of a peanut. I don't care. I want Djokovic to lose. So I have and I think most people have to do that, don't they?
Yeah, I do too. So you basically, for the last 4 or 5 years, you've been relatively unhappy with tennis because that's all he's done is win. That's the dilemma. That's the,
not so. I mean, I've been focused more on the Canadians.
Really good.
Federer hasn't played much and he's 40 years old and, it's probably over. Yeah. And Nadal hasn't played a whole lot. So I've been more focused on the Canadians.
Okay, so let me ask you this, because your favorite sport is golf. Did you always root against Tiger? And did your philosophy about Tiger change?
Well, I was a Palmer guy.
Yeah,
I'll give you the chronology of events. So I grew up a Palmer guy.
Yeah.
Which meant I had to hate Jack.
Correct.
Which was difficult because Jack's from my hometown.
Jack was a better golfer.
Well, yes, Jack became a better golfer, but he also became a better person. And I got to know him. And I interviewed him on numerous occasions. Mm-hmm. I traveled to Scotland with him. And so I became a Jack fan. And probably as early as the mid to late 60s, when Arnold stopped winning. Mm-hmm. And Jack's, he used to be Fat Jack, to be very honest.
Sure.
And he lost weight and he became a little bit more hip and he let his hair grow longer and blah, 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 blah. And I became a fan of his. And then when I met him, I just thought he was delightful. Now I met Arnold too. And Arnold was, Arnold was Arnold. You couldn't not like Arnold. But Jack was disliked early in his career.
He had no personality, Bob.
No.
He had no personality. He was all business. And whether it was the slick back hair and Arnie was throwing his hat and Arnie was smiling and winking and Jack was all pure business for those first five or six years.
Jack's personality changed. He softened considerably. He became much more approachable. Yeah. He became a really nice guy. And I talked to him about it. He was told that it was important for him to change his public persona.
But you know who that would have been, right? That would have been Mark McCormick.
I was going to say, it was McCormick, who interestingly enough represented Arnold too.
Right, right. But, for those people who don't know who Mark McCormick is, he invented a company named IMG, International Marketing Group. And IMG to this day, in one form or another, still represents athletes and is a big part of professional marketing. It has become a cornerstone of the sports marketing world.
Anyway,
but so you didn't answer my question.
Well, I forget the question.
Tiger.
No, I was never a Tiger fan.
And are you now?
More. And again, it was personality driven. Tiger was very much like young Jack. He was aloof. I thought he looked down his nose on everybody.
I didn't see that.
I thought his interviews were media speak and not real.
They were that.
And I mean, those are all things that I don't like. And so I did not root for Tiger. I rooted against Tiger.
But after the injuries, after the breakup with Elon and his rise from the ashes, did your philosophy change about Tiger?
No, not there. That didn't do it. It is not until the last few years. I always respected Tiger.
Yeah.
I didn't have, when Arnold was around, I rooted for Arnold over Jack. Once Arnold left, I rooted for Jack. Who was Tiger's rival?
Phil.
Well, the American media would say Phil.
Yeah.
Mickelson.
Yeah.
But the truth is that Mickelson almost never beat Tiger head to head. They weren't, Mickelson won events the Tiger didn't play in. A lot of them.
But they were at one point for a long period of time the pitted arch rivals on the PGA Tour. They were.
Well, that is the impression that the golf journalists, broadcasters, and Golf Channel specifically tried to perpetuate. And I never bought it. I'll buy the fact that statistically, Mickelson was probably the second best golfer of that era. Mm-hmm. Although there are others you have to look at. But I'll give you that. The dilemma I had was I didn't like Tiger and I didn't like Phil. I know a lot of things about Phil that don't come out and haven't come out and shouldn't come out. And he is not the happy, friendly personality that he purports to be. A lot of that has been phony baloney. Now, at his age now, maybe it's far more sincere. I'll give you this. Mickelson signed autographs on a regular basis. Tiger didn't. Tiger turned up his nose at almost everybody.
Right.
I find that unappealing in Tiger. So there were redeeming qualities to Mickelson, but I just never liked him. And I never felt like it was always Jack or Arnold.
It was a simpler time, Bob. It was simpler time.
I guess.
Oh, sure. I just never felt like
it was Mickelson versus Woods. Tiger was clearly the best player from the day he stepped on the PGA Tour.
Sure.
He was absolutely the better player and blew Mickelson away in every way possible. Mm-hmm. And so I never considered it a real rivalry. I don't even know if they did. I'll bet you Tiger didn't think of it as a rivalry.
Oh, no, no. There's no question they thought they were rivals.
I'll bet you Tiger looked at the numbers and says, I won twice as many golf tournaments as he did.
Yeah.
Twice as many.
I tell you what, Phil viewed Tiger as a rival. I can tell you that.
Oh, sure. Everybody, yeah. Tiger was a rival to everybody that was below him.
Yeah.
The difference with Tiger was he was here and everybody else was down here. It was no different than when Jack, when Arnold finally stopped winning in the late 60s, Jack had no rival. Who was Jack's rival? Tom Watson, near the end of his career. Lee Trevino, a little bit.
Trevino, Weisskopf, Watson were the
three. How many tournaments did Weisskopf win?
I tell you what, you look at Weisskopf's numbers. I mean, and now we're talking to people over 60. Well, but I'll tell you what, and the problem with Weisskopf was that he was a Buckeye as well, right?
He's also from Columbus.
And he was supposed to be the next Nicklaus. And he never reached that level.
There were a bunch of guys that were supposed to.
Weisskopf, and so many times, Weisskopf was one of those guys that never got to the pinnacle because Jack was always in his way. And the other way, I do think Trevino was the rival for a certain period of time because he had personality. And prior to that, remember the big three, it was Arnie, Jack, and Gary Player, that was at a time when, that was at a time when television showed the last six holes of a golf tournament with two cameras on either hole.
Well, it was also a time when they had a weekly television show called
The Big Three.
Big Three Golf.
Yeah.
Which was those three guys. So how many tournaments do you think Weisskopf won?
I was going to say 14.
16.
Okay. Yeah. But I tell you, how many times he finished second?
Well, I don't know. How many times did Jack finish second? Jack finished second in majors 19 times.
Yeah, I know.
In majors.
I know, but Bob, I'm not arguing Jack. You asked me who were his rivals.
Tom Weisskopf was not a rival. Tom Weisskopf was a good player who played in the same era as Jack.
Yeah.
but he was not a rival.
At that period of time, it went Palmer to Nicklaus, Nicklaus to Watson, and then who after Watson?
Watson wasn't. Watson was.
So you don't like Watson.
I don't. No, I don't. I had a run-in.
Because you don't think Watson has personality. And you never forgave him for writing the letter to the Masters that got Gary McCord kicked off the CBS broadcast.
I don't know if I even knew that. Look, I had a row with Watson at the National Golf Club during an event. I don't even know whether it wasn't a tour event, I don't think, but there were a bunch of
That's where I first met you, Bob.
At the National?
At the National, at the CPGA.
Is that what it was? Yeah.
When they brought Trevino was there. They brought Watson and Trevino. That's when Trevino sat on your show. I was working for another radio station at the time. And sat on your show.
You were listening to me.
Well, you were on site, pal. You were there. Bigger than ever, thinking that you were as good as the pros. Yeah. That's when he turned and somebody said, you don't have a problem through trees. He says, no, but he says 80% of 80% of trees are air, just like a screen door. So anyway.
Well, I won't go into my Watson thing.
No, I can always tell.
A very good player. I will not call him great. I think he was a step short of great. And I will tell you this, in fairness, at age 59, when he was almost won the British Open.
Yeah.
Should have won the British Open, but choked.
Well, no, he didn't. He putted like you on the 18th.
We have something in common.
Yeah, there you go.
I was rooting for Watson. I hated him the minute the tournament was over, and I wasn't upset that he lost, but I was actually rooting for him. I thought it would be a great story. Win a major at age 59. Well, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So the Watson thing is one thing. When you talk about relationships, you mentioned Mickelson and some of the stuff that, you know, is away from the golf course that bothers you. How important is that stuff? And how much, you know, how important is that stuff? And should it be important?
I've never tried to hide the fact that I am not a dispassionate observer of sports.
Not a dispassionate observer. That's a double negative. So that means you're a passionate observer.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have opinions. And I, on just about everything.
Yes, you do.
Well, but most people in the media, most of the donkeys that you hired over the years are just, you know, talking heads. They have no thoughts. They have no opinions. They don't go out on a limb, you know.
And that you think they should.
That's why, I mean, that's what's great. We had Milbury on yesterday. I mean, here's a guy who says what he thinks.
Yeah.
I have great respect for that. I have great respect for Don Cherry. I think Don's full of hooey most of the time, and I don't agree with him, but at least he had an act and he would say what he thought. Mm-hmm. Got him in trouble as it got me in trouble from time to time. In any event,
you didn't answer the question about should we be concerned about people's lives away from the game?
Yes. And I mean, look at, you remember the big row I got into with Cito Gaston?
Sure.
So, to refresh your memory, one of the things I said that was quoted all over the place was, and I said, I don't think Cito's a good manager. Now, I don't like Cito as a person. And does that cloud my judgment in terms of his managing? And I said, I think it does. Mm-hmm. I think it's only natural. I thought Cito was an a-hole. And it made it difficult.
From personal experience?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's the only way I would have judged it. And so, I mean, that's how I look at things. You know, I have an opinion on somebody, their personality, and it judges the way I analyze them. Now, I will not, you know, if we were having a conversation specifically about Phil Mickelson, I would begin by saying I'm not a big Mickelson fan, and these are some of the reasons why. And I did that consistently with Cito. I'd say I don't like him, and therefore it probably makes it hard for me to have an impassioned observation, a judgment of his managerial skills.
Right.
And I criticize those repeatedly.
Yeah.
So I think if you're honest, it's, you know, about something, that's all you should have to be.
Yeah.
You don't agree.
No, I think that in your line of work, on the craft that you have created as a sports talk radio broadcaster. I think you have to have opinion. I think, but I also believe I'm not suggesting this. I also think there has to be a level of fairness, which I don't think, and I do think you're fair. I don't think a lot of people are fair at times because first of all, they don't know.
Well, and fairness so is, a, but don't you think fairness is
fairness is relative?
Call. That's right.
Fairness is relative.
There's it's a no judgment question. Call. Like if you don't agree with me, you're going to say I'm not being fair. If you agree with me, you probably won't raise the subject of fairness. Do you agree or disagree?
I understand that. I would tell you that if I felt strongly that you weren't being fair, I would say, hey, listen, here's what you should know before you make that decision.
And you you know how I would respond to that?
Yeah, I could go take a flying fidu and go to
break. Shut up.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, shut up. We got to take a break. We'll come back with more after these messages. And we're back.
Welcome to Seinfeld.
Yeah, no one. Yeah, well, show about nothing.
Show about nothing.
And are you surprised I picked up on that?
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Yeah, did you watch Seinfeld on a regular basis?
Oh, yeah.
I never did.
Absolutely.
I never did.
Yeah. Now, I'm Thursday tell night, you man. Thursday night.
I go to bed now and I have my iPhone beside the bed and I prop it up against the light and I watch Seinfeld episodes till I fall asleep.
What about that big Hurken big screen TV?
It's not in the bedroom.
Oh. Why didn't you have one in the bedroom?
Well, you know, if you did a better job on this podcast, I'd have enough money to buy a TV for the bedroom. But until that starts happening.
Oh, it's all on me, is it?
No, 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to discuss a topic that I know you're interested in and I couldn't care less about.
Okay.
Somebody named Kent Hughes has been hired as the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah.
I confess I'd never heard of Kent Hughes. He was a player for a couple of minutes. And then
he was known as a player agent though, Bob.
And then became an agent. And I don't remember him being an agent, but
he's got some pretty big clients.
Well, not anymore. He doesn't. No. Now he's got a bunch of players that he has to command, none of whom have, well, the majority of whom don't have enough talent to win in the National Hockey League. What qualifies him? An agent to become a general manager? Because we've seen this like more than a few times.
Sure. Last I checked, Pierre Lacroix, who won two Stanley Cups in Denver, was an agent. Your buddy, Brian Burke. Former agent, you know, these guys are in and around the game. I think that they have as much sense of the game and judgment of the game as anyone. The ability and skill to negotiate contracts is a big part of being the general manager. Player evaluation, it's not a one-man show anyway. It's building a team around you. Here's the thing about Kent Hughes.
You get into Kent Hughes, So do you think there are guys that finish their hockey career at whatever age and become an agent with an aspiration to be a general manager? Like, is that,
I think it's possible.
Do people actually do that process?
I think it's possible. Yes. Yeah,
really? Huh?
I do. And I do think that there's more than a handful of agents out there that always look at that the grass is greener on the other side. That's saying, well, I can do that job. Why don't I do that job? You know, for the longest time, I think there's a lot of people that have said, and we've had him on the show, Pat Brisson. Why isn't Pat Brisson a general manager? Could be a great general manager, good evaluator, great relationships with people. Pat Brisson couldn't take the pay cut to be a general manager.
Well, I was just gonna say that. You know, if you're Brisson's pretty much at the top of the food chain, isn't he? You would think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if he's number one, but he probably, wouldn't you say he's in the top three economically?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I mean, let's look, you know, we started talking about Mark McCormick and IMG. Patty started as an IMG guy, and then he's now at CAA, which is, it's at the top of the food chain in the entertainment world, period. Forget about hockey. So Pat Brisson is there. But, you know, Kent Hughes is an interesting one. American-born, but lived most of his life in Montreal. So fully bilingual, which is a very important part of the job in Montreal, to speak to the fans and to the media there. But more importantly, for me, when hiring Kent Hughes, is Jeff Gorton hired someone he has known for a long period of time, can trust, and they can start building from scratch now. Because I think that's exactly what they have to do in Montreal, is start from scratch. If Patrick Roy interviewed for that. Patrick Roy interviewed for this job. You know, how much did Jeff Gorton know Patrick Roy? Not very much at all. So the question would become, how much pure and utter trust between Gorton and the manager has to exist? And that's why Kent Hughes, in my opinion, got the job.
You mentioned Patrick Roy, not to change the subject here, but if Patrick Roy returned to the National Hockey League, would he be better suited as a coach or a GM?
I think as a coach.
So do I.
I do think as a coach. It's funny. Lots of people that were great players don't have much success either as coach or managers. But we have seen Roy have a little bit of success as a coach, both in the Quebec Major Junior League, and then for a small part of that time, he was in Colorado. But, you know, being a manager, I'll tell you what, this day and age, I don't think it's near the fun, or not fun's a bad word. I don't think it's near as enjoyable as it once was in the NHL. Right. And so I think that from a personality perspective, I think Patrick Roy would be much better suited as a coach. And so what's going to happen in Montreal too, Bob, is that Dominique Ducharme has, let's face it, I think has been a bust as a coach of Canadiens. He was an assistant there for a while, but came out of Halifax in the Hockey Canada program with a lot of success on the junior level. He's not done a good job under trying circumstances in Montreal. So what's going to happen, I think, is we're going to start hearing Patrick Roy's name again as in the summertime as potential coach of Montreal.
Let me say this. I think it's difficult to assess what the Montreal Canadiens are right now, given that they had this extraordinary run last year and now have fallen flat on their face, something you don't see very often. And you wonder whether was last year a fluke? Or is this year like a fluke?
And you're last year's an outlier. Last year's an outlier, Bob. It was an outlier.
Well, I think if you have a goaltender like Carey Price, he's, you know, it's easy to forget about him because he hasn't played all year. But this guy is if not the top goaltender in the National Hockey League, he's certainly one of them. And that, as we've talked about, as everybody in hockey talks about, it's the most important, the second most important, and the third most important thing on a hockey team is how good your goaltender is. And I wonder whether Carey Price carried that inept group of Montreal Canadiens to a championship, or was it a combination of Carey Price standing on his head and a bunch of guys overproducing? And I think the latter is probably the case, but I'm not sure you want to dump on the coach. If this team is crap, then they'd be crap with any coach. So maybe the coaching change isn't necessary. Maybe the roster is crummy.
Well, I think there's parts of the roster that need to be changed. Let's remember last year, you know, not only was Carey Price at the top of his game, but Shea Weber was playing very well. Jeff Petrie had a career playoff and has fallen off the face of the earth this year. Edmondson was that big guy that had a great playoff run. Ben Sherratt played very well. They had four defensemen with wingspans like condors that made a big difference on the blue line for them. And they're young guys. Nick Suzuki was so good. Dare I remind everybody that Cole Caulfield had a career playoff in his first playoff.
Yep.
and so there was the stars aligned for Montreal in so many ways. Look what Philip Deneau did. I mean, he didn't score many goals, but Philip Deneau became the great shutdown center for Montreal in the playoffs and played himself.
But the vast majority of those guys are still there, and now they're crap.
Well, Weber's not there. Price is not there.
I said vast majority.
Well, there's no Corey Perry there now. There's enough of a change. There's enough of a change that this is not near the team that went to the Stanley Cup final against Tampa last year. It really is. It's just,
of course it isn't by, if you look at the standings and their performance.
I'm looking at the
but
roster.
But in essence, the nucleus of the team is there with one exception. Well, with two. Weber, although at his age, who knows what you could have expected of him. And Carey Price.
I think
Price.
There's more than two, Bob. I think there's more
and
than
two. And Carey Price.
Yeah. Listen, Carey Price was all world. We know that. He was all world.
Shane Weber played. With the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, this is hypothetical. Would the Montreal Canadiens be in a position to aspire to a playoff spot if Carey Price was playing all year?
No.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you're wrong.
No, there's no way. Not with this roster. Even with Carey in goal.
Well,
you know, what has to happen now is that Carey has to become completely mentally and physically healthy, back to 100%. They've already announced that his knee rehab has not gone well. It's almost back to scratch right now for him. He has to hope that he's ready for next October in so many ways.
Well, okay, that's nice, but I didn't ask you about that. I asked if Carey Price was healthy.
If Carey Price was healthy, this team would still not be anywhere near the playoffs.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Well. And the evidence is last year.
You're not being fair, Bob.
I think the evidence is last year.
And no, again, they had so many players playing so well last year. Bob,
well, but how did you know? Carey. How could you be sure that they weren't going to? This wasn't a young, and it was. They had couple of their key players were very young.
Sure, they were.
Were these guys going to continue to mature and get better and better? I mean, that would be the norm.
But they miss Corey Perry. They miss Phil Deneau. They miss Shea Weber. I mean, they miss a ton of guys. They really do.
Well, they really do.
Really.
Really?
Really, Bob.
All right. I'm not going to argue with you anymore. It's a waste of time. I think that's enough. We'll take a break and come back and wrap it up. Yeah, I think that's enough. I think people have heard enough of us nonsense today. And I'm not sure we have any other stories. Oh, Michael Friesdahl's out as CEO
MLS. Most of the
nobody knows who he is.
Who the heck is Michael Friesdahl?
Nobody knows who he is. I don't know who he is. I think we had him on the show the day he got hired. And I think I nodded off during the conversation.
Oh, now that's not nice.
Live on
that, that is not nice.
I don't have to be nice.
He probably treated you very nicely.
I didn't say he wasn't a nice guy. Off. He's just boring as bat dirt.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You disagree?
I don't know.
Is this guy
a big
personality? Do you know how many times after the first time we had him on, we decided to have him on again?
None. I know.
Donut. Because he put us all to sleep.
Okay. Just don't.
Doesn't mean he's not nice.
No, I wanted you to be nice.
Boring. I didn't say he wasn't good at his job. I have no idea what you have to do at that job to be not good. You just show up and the money rolls in.
Yeah, right.
Hell, I could do that job.
No, I
don't. Have they hired a replacement for him?
No, not yet.
All right. I'm a candidate.
Nothing's changed. You're always a candidate for some other job.
I have an excellent attendance record, and I believe that is all that is important in that job.
I tell you what, you'd get a great parking spot.
Well, my limo driver would get a great parking spot. I'm not taking that job and driving myself. Are you crazy? Back after more. Or no, back with more after these messages. Bob McCollum's John Shannon, and we're about to say goodbye. But we have 60 seconds left, and I have nothing to say.
Well, no, you've probably got to find a driver. I mean, somebody can drive you from. Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. I am not using them right now, but I make a phone call and.
Really?
Right away. There'll be a block long limousine in front of my house to pick me up and take me to work.
I have a driver too.
Yeah, it's you.
No. My wife drives. She thinks I'm a bad driver. So
she has never driven you to my house. Well, maybe once.
No, she got mad. She got mad when we got in the car together and I sat in the back seat. She did not appreciate me getting in the back seat. Home, Jeeves.
You really did that?
Oh, I did that once. It didn't go over very well, though.
No kidding. Well, that explains a lot. But I like your style, I must confess. All right, that's enough. We're wasting everybody's time here, not the least of which is mine.
Quality content.
For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, though, we'll be back tomorrow, maybe. Yeah, can we get fired from this job?
Nope.
All right, so we'll be back tomorrow with something. Who knows what? We hope you'll give us a second chance. Goodbye, everybody.